Welcome to Chapter 3. This chapter is entitled Modern Prior Restraints. I like the name of this chapter because although many of us may not think of the 1920s and 30s as modern, it's still more in the modern age, of course, than back with the Alien and Sedition Acts. And we frankly in this chapter go all the way up to what we might consider the modern age, the 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s. Prior restraint is what we would call censorship. It is suppressing speech before it has been published. So in other words, if I restrain you, if I engage in prior restraint, that means I am censoring you, stopping you from speaking before you have had a chance to speak. Okay, censorship is, of course, a lot sexier word, and it gets people a lot more enraged than prior restraint does, but they mean the same thing. Prior restraint is different from something called subsequent punishment. Subsequent means after. So subsequent punishment is punishment of speech after it takes place. For example, if you libel me, you know, I can't prior restrain you from libeling me because, of course, you have to libel me for me to have a suit there, but I can punish you after the fact. So libel isn't prior restraint, but it is subsequent punishment. And currently we only have a couple of kinds of prior restraint that are okay, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Okay, big prior restraint case. Promise you will see it on a quiz somewhere in the future. The case is called Near versus Minnesota. Guy is named Jay Near. He published a newspaper in Duluth, Minnesota called the Saturday Press. The Saturday Press was not a very nice newspaper. Jay Near didn't really like anyone. He was anti-Catholic, anti-Semitic, anti-black, anti-labor, anti-everyone. Not a very nice guy. And he made some serious allegations against the Minneapolis government, basically. He said, well, you know, the bootleggers and gangsters are running Minneapolis, and we really should, you know, act in against this, and the cops aren't really doing their job. And understandably, the police were not very happy about this. Minnesota, like every state, has nuisance laws. Nuisance laws are usually used for loud noises outside or littering. But in this case, the state decided that Jay Near's newspaper, the Saturday Press, was a public nuisance. And they shut it down. They engaged in prior restraint. They said, Near, you can't publish it anymore. Jay Near was not very happy about this. So he brought it through the court system. And what happened was the Supreme Court gets the case and it says, hold on a minute here. This is a prior restraint. It's a 5-4 decision, so it was not a ringing endorsement. But they said in this case, Jay Near should be permitted to keep publishing the Saturday Press. Okay? The Chief Justice at the time, Chief Justice Hughes, wrote, "The fact that the liberty of the press may be abused by miscreant purveyors of scandal does not make any less the immunity of the press from previous restraint in dealing with official misconduct." Right? In English, Hughes is saying, just because some people are naughty with the First Amendment, they use the First Amendment for ways that the founders or other people may not find to be acceptable, doesn't mean that we should punish the press for a few people's badnesses. Okay? He also did sort of a historical review, and he said, well, you know, there's really only a couple of times when we should shut people up before they can speak. And the three times that he identified, and it wouldn't hurt you to know this, are troop movements during wartime, obscenity, and incitements to acts of violence and the overthrow by force of orderly government. Troop movements during wartime, you can understand. Do you guys remember a few years ago when Geraldo Rivera was taped, I think it was on Fox News, drawing lines in the sand saying, this troops are going to go over here and these troops are going to go over here? Well, you understand kind of why that might be problematic. You kind of don't want to tip your enemy's hand as to where you might be sending people so that they may harm them. Okay, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about obscenity, but obscenity is sexual speech that doesn't receive any First Amendment protection. So if the courts deem something to be obscene, it can be prior restraint, and that is the law today. And of course, incitement to acts of violence and the overthrow by force of orderly government is really a fancy way of saying incitement to imminent lawless action that comes out of Brandenburg. So those things are true today. There's some other areas as well, but for our purposes back at the Near versus Minnesota time, these are the three times that were identified. Okay. Let's talk about the Pentagon Papers case. The Pentagon Papers' real name is New York Times versus U.S. I will call it the Pentagon Papers. Everybody calls it the Pentagon Papers case. That gentleman there is named Daniel Ellsberg. He was working for a think tank who was working with the Department of Defense. And he was able to obtain a copy of this gigantic report. called basically The American Involvement in Southeast Asia. I don't know what the actual name was. It was 47 volumes, a very long report. And it was not really thrilling reading, but it was an important source of information of how we were dealing with the war in Southeast Asia at the time. It had been commissioned in the late 60s. And Ellsberg got a hold of it, and he leaked it to the New York Times and the Washington Post. Well, Nixon found out about this and had a holy heck fit. We can't let this be published. National security, oh my goodness. And so it went back and forth among judges. I'm not going to go through the whole how it went back and forth, but several different judges were involved. It bounced back and forth. And finally, it gets to the Supreme Court. All right, the Supreme Court goes on vacation during the summer. All right, so they end basically July 1, and they don't come back into session until the first Monday in October. But they came back in July and August to hear our arguments to resolve this case, because prior restraint is kind of a big deal. Okay, you don't want to shut the news down for very long, because it's really a bad abridgment on the First Amendment. So they come back, and the Supreme Court says, print. This is one of my favorite pictures in all of these slides. It's these happy pressmen. They can't wait. They're waiting to push that print button. Okay? Supreme Court, on a 6-3 decision, says, we think that this information is protected by the First Amendment for the press to publish it. So the justices' opinions were sort of all over the board. No justice's opinion fully supported any element of the case, necessarily. Okay? But the court said, in order for the government to engage in prior restraint, it's got to really meet a high burden of proof. And they didn't do it. The money quote is in red there. Any system of prior restraints of expression comes to this court bearing a heavy presumption against its constitutional validity. In English, the Supreme Court says, if you're going to engage in prior restraint, you have to have a really good reason. Because we're going to assume that you don't. You've got to prove it otherwise. Daniel Ellsberg was arrested and charged, and then eventually his charges were dropped, and he now travels the country talking about the Pentagon Papers case. It's an interesting set of facts. He's an interesting guy. Okay. Let's talk about some other areas where we might be concerned about restraining. That newspaper or magazine there is called the Progressive Magazine. It's published out of Wisconsin. It's a progressive magazine, actually. It talks about issues of progressive politics. This is not a high-profile, important case, but the reason I teach it is it's an interesting set of facts, one. And two, it's also interesting to see how far we're willing to push prior restraint. Let me explain. Progressive gets an article, and the article is called The H-Bomb Secret, How We Got It, Why We're Telling It, just like the cover there says. Now, the Progressive is a good journalistic magazine. They wanted to be sure that this description of how to make a bomb was right. So they sent it off to the Atomic, or to the Department of Defense, and said, hey, would this plan work? And the Department of Defense took a look at it and said, oh my goodness, yes it would. And you can't be telling everybody how to make an atomic bomb. This is a problem. And the Progressive said, well, but wait a minute here. We just compiled this article out of regular library physics research. We got the information out of any public library. We don't see that this is a problem here. But it went to court anyway. Now, Western District of Wisconsin is the federal district court in Wisconsin, one of them. Okay, so this is not a hugely precedential case. As I said, it didn't even get appealed. So the judge gets the case and he says, well, let's take a think about this. Life, speech. He writes, a mistaken ruling could pave the way for thermonuclear annihilation for us all. In that event, our right to life is extinguished, and the right to publish becomes moot. Moot, of course, is irrelevant. Okay? So he's saying, look, if I have to make the balance here between letting us live and letting us speak, I'm going to err on the side of letting us live. The Progressive was getting ready to appeal this when the author of the article decided he was tired of waiting. And so he aggregated his article into some letters to the editor, and he sent them to newspapers all over the country. And 7 or 8 newspapers all over the country printed his letter. So the information was out there. There was no reason for the case to continue on. And fortunately for all of us, we're still here. Because frankly, you can't go down to the 7-Eleven and buy heavy water and, you know, uranium and deuterium and all the stuff that you need to make an H-bomb. It's a little bit tough to get the the ingredients for it. So even if you know the recipe, you know, the argument goes, you can't really make the bomb because it's really hard to get the stuff. But the reason I teach this case, the reason I find it interesting, is because it really demonstrates how far we're willing to go. Many of us who are concerned about protecting as much speech as possible, who are free speech liberals, think, you know, even in this case, we might have erred on the side of caution. And if you say that I said that, I'll deny it until my dying breath. Okay? All right. Let's think a little bit about some overview issues of freedom of expression. We now know that, generally speaking, there are very few times that prior restraints can take place, and there is no seditious libel. Okay? And again, sedition is criticism of the government. So we are permitted to criticize the government, and generally speaking, there are no prior restraints. Secondly, there are some areas of speech that are not protected at all. Let's talk about them quickly. Defamation is one of them. If I falsely harm your reputation, that is not protected speech. For example, if I call you, you know, a slut, or I say that you have a loathsome disease, or I call you incompetent, that's defamation. And that is not protected speech. We'll talk a lot more about that when we get to Chapter 4. Obscenity is not protected. That is sexual speech that meets a test called the Miller test. That is not protected. And as we're going to see in the next section, fighting words are not protected. If I say words that are likely to cause a person to fight, I am not protected by the First Amendment. Incitement under Brandenburg from last chapter. So if I try to rile you up and go to hurt people right now, that is not protected. Incitement to imminent lawless behavior is not protected. And as we're going to see in Chapter 13, if I advertise illegal goods or services, or I write a misleading ad, that is not protected. So no matter how cheaply I want to sell my meth, I can't advertise it. The law forbids me to do so. Child pornography. If you're under the age of majority, most cases that's the age of 18 or 16, depending on the state, you are not permitted to sell that material that has children engaged in sexual activity. Then we're going to see in Chapter 13 that there's something called the commercial speech doctrine. Even speech that is advertising legal goods and services and is truthful can sometimes be regulated. For example, tobacco or liquor or gambling. Even though in most states that's legal, all of those things are legal if you're of a certain age, the states are still permitted to regulate. The most highly protected speech is political speech. Speech that helps us engage in self-governing democracy.